that Los Angeles sunshine coming through.
Please stand by. Prime Video and Westworld director Jonathan Nolan invite you to Fallout.
After 200 years, we don't know much about what's up there. Violence, desperation, lawlessness.
Everyone wants to save the world, and they just disagree on how.
We're going to get across that wasteland, and we're going to do it together.
Fallout. All episodes available now on Prime Video.
You'll be the best, and you got to pay a little price. If you want it bad enough, you got to do a little extra things to get it.
Welcome to the 11 Personnel Podcast, your favorite Rams podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Rodrigue, and with me, as always, my fabulous co-host, Rich Hammond. Rich, how we doing?
Well, Jordan, a devastating fantasy loss in week one. We should start there, but I we'll talk about that another time. I know you'll want to get the details of that, but
absolutely.
Yes. Week one in the books now. What a game. I cannot wait to talk about this game with you, Jordan. I think we have so much to discuss, and of course, we'll look ahead to this coming weekend's game against the Indianapolis Colts, too. Jordan, you covered the game so well, as always, on the Athletic app and website. Great to see the pile come back. I love it. I'd love to see all of the thoughts and the way that you process a game and the way that that translates to the page, to your story. So where do we want to start with this? I thought it was a good win for the Rams. 34-14. We talked at the end of the last episode about how it may be a slow start. We didn't know exactly what to expect from this team, especially this offense in week one. What were your big takeaways from this season opening win?
Well, my first major takeaway is excited to share that the presenting sponsor for today's episode of the 11 Personnel Podcast is Visa, a network working for everyone. Also working for everyone, Matthew Stafford at quarterback, I think, at this current moment, Rich.
Yeah. How about that? I mean, to me, I don't want to get too – look, it's one game, right? And we don't want to get too – there's a lot of hyperbole out there, but that exceeded my expectations for a quarterback in his first game in a new system, hadn't played any preseason games. I mean, is that just an extension, Jordan, of what you saw when you watched all of these preseason practices and training camp practices?
Well, the really fun things to me were having that weird deja vu when the first explosive air yards play, the touchdown to Van Jefferson, and then the second one to Cooper Kupp. They ran those all day long in training camp. And so, and with a variety of different receivers. And so, I thought that was so, so fun to start the game that way because, it was clear the pieces that of the puzzle that they had been stacking together. And you could tell they were sort of statement plays. I'm not sure that they expected to get those particular looks as early in the game as they did. I feel like a normal Sean McVay game plan that people want to scheme against is to expect the run early on, not necessarily the pass. In the past, it's been very, you know, as much as he wants to say it hasn't been scripted, their first drive isn't scripted, they've just got a menu of plays to call from.
Sure. Like,
that's not really what we saw the last couple of years. So this was kind of interesting because it just felt freer. It just felt like, you know, okay, you're going to give us a look because you think we're maybe going to run. So we're going to pass it on you, and we're going to not just pass it on you, but we're going to set up this explosive passing play on Matthew Stafford's second throw of the game. And I think it was the third play overall of the game. And it just was outstanding. You can see, you could see that the way that the ball and the player were going to connect at their apex, and you could also see that the Bears were not going to be able to stop it. And I think that got the crowd really, really excited about that Van Jefferson play. His awareness of not being touched and then getting into the end zone, that was something that, you know, a rookie doesn't make that call in terms of maybe knowing that. So showed a lot of preparation on his part as well. And I thought it was just a really exciting and a really fitting way to sort of open the Matthew Stafford era, to sound dramatic, I guess, because this team, they want to throw the ball downfield. Now, we're going to get into a little bit later about you know, where the balance needs to come in, because it certainly does need to come in. And I'm not trying to be a downer or anything like that. We'll get into that a little bit later. But but I thought that those were just really exciting plays. I thought they were executed perfectly. All the little pieces. It's not just the quarterback and one receiver. It's a lot of different things that have to come into play to execute those. And a lot of people working on the small details to make those things happen. And that's really what you saw all through camp, was Matthew Stafford and his receivers and his offensive linemen working on all of the little details and putting all of the little pieces together in order to come out and sort of create something like that. So dominant win, a couple of sticky areas, but that was something I think we both expected, at least early on, in some of the finer points in the red zone and all of those things. But definitely a dominant win, a statement win. Definitely a statement for Matthew Stafford, who just looked like he was having a total blast out there, honestly.
Yeah, he really did. And it's, again, we're not going to put too much hyperbole on one game. But I will say, you know, as somebody who was somewhat critical, or at least asking questions about this trade, and, you know, why did you do this, and why did you commit all this money to Jared Goff and then, you know, make this big trade? Look, when you see it on the field, you understand what they were trying to do. You understand why Sean McVay thought he had to make that move, why Les Snead thought he had to make that move. We can debate the gritty details all we want for years and years, and I still think that some mistakes were made, missteps were made along the way, but you can't double down on problems. And I think what we saw in week one there is just that's what the vision was. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be like that every week. It's not going to be perfect. There's going to be problems along the way. Matthew Stafford's going to throw interceptions. Like, I'm not saying that it's just going to be, you know, a rosy path all the way to the Super Bowl, but you can see what the thought process was and how this offense looks so different when Matthew Stafford is running it. And you can certainly see what Sean McVay was thinking as a play caller and as an architect to have somebody like that. One play got me, Jordan, and you wrote about this in your column. And I know a lot of people will look at the, you know, the big explosives, the 75 yards, the 50 pluses, whatever. But that touchdown pass that he threw to Robert Woods early in the fourth quarter, I think, was one to me. And I think it was only what, like a 2 or 3 yard touchdown pass. It was they were deep in the red zone at the time. And it was the play to me where I thought, I don't know that Jared Goff is ever going to make that play to where Matthew Stafford just stood in there. I don't know how many reads he made on that play. Robert Woods was definitely not the first read.
Right. I think he was the third.
There you go. Yeah. Third read on the play. You know, he's got these Chicago Bears kind of swarming around him, you know, and hangs in there and just delivers a perfect, perfect strike. And by the way, Robert Woods' catch was probably even better than Matthew Stafford's throw to go up and then, you know, just really tiptoe in the back of the end zone. But what a play that was. And just the shows. And I think, Jordan, stuff like that trickles down to the rest of the offense when you see somebody make a play like that. And that's the kind of thing, you know, Jared just didn't show enough of those moments where he made you really open your eyes and go, wow, that was really a play. I mean, that was really something to see. And I think you saw that a handful of times with Matthew Stafford. I mean, that the big touchdown throw to Van Jefferson, I mean, he rolls out and I don't know. He did get his feet set, but he was going against his body. He was kind of, it looked like he was kind of half throwing off of his back foot and still got the ball about, you know, 55, 60 yards in the air, I think, to make a play like that. I mean, those are the kind of plays to me where I was like, okay, this is why this guy is here and this is how this offense can be so much different than it was the last 2 years.
Yeah. So, and like, this is the thing. I'm so happy that fans got to watch this because it's something I've been trying to communicate and probably have sounded like a broken record, probably been a bit annoying actually, in terms of like, everyone's been asking, well, what's the best ad for that Matthew Stafford has? What's the thing that you need to see from him? What's the thing that you think people are most excited about? It's not, to me, not necessarily the explosive plays. Sure. That's a good shot of dopamine to the system, but this guy problem solves in real time. That's the biggest and most important thing that I could possibly express to anybody about this quarterback is he problem solves in real time. And right. you saw it over and over and over again, even under circumstances that maybe weren't even always adverse. His line, I thought, played a pretty good game. Rob Havenstein, I think, deserves a shout out for the way that he sort of stood yeah. Khalil Mack up on that play that you were just talking about, that touchdown pass to Robert Woods. I think the things that I would point out is the play, the touchdown pass to Cooper Kupp, this was a coverage that the Rams for years could not solve. They were in the quarter half. This is a Vic Fangio, you know, Sean Desai running the same thing. You know, that this was a play that they could not, this was a problem they could not solve in years past. I don't know if it was just the quarterback. I don't know if it was that they didn't have the concept. I don't know. I don't, right. I'm not going to dwell on whatever the past issue was there. But they came out and they solved it. This is a play that they ran in camp. This was a play that they ran with a variety of different receivers in camp, by the way. So that's something to look forward to, I think.
Right.
But this is also a play, a coverage that teams executed against the Rams to great effect, a look that they got because it worked against them and, you know, stifled them in many ways, and something that they especially were not able to solve because they weren't throwing the ball downfield last season. So this is something you watch them and it's a problem being solved in real time, and a statement in that regard being made in real time, that the things that used to work against this football team no longer work. And I think that that is something that's really, really important to make sure it's clear, is the things that defenses used to be able to do with great effect against this team no longer will have that effect. And that was, I think, a statement that they were maybe not overtly trying to make, but you could bet good money that internally we're trying to make that statement. And so that, and then the problem solving in real time, obviously, that comes from just great quarterback play in short yardage, moving into your more difficult read in short yardage down there, compounded into the red zone and backed up, you know, making, you know, up close to the end zone, and to get that ball to Robert Woods. I mean, that's just that something that now you can expect, that things, you know, you've got a chance anywhere you are. And I think that that's another thing that's important. And you see him sort of solving things in real time. When they struggled in the red zone previously, you're like, well, that probably, you know, you never got the sense that just was going to spell their doom for the rest of the game. You got the right. sense that, you know, maybe the next time they get down there, they'll have a different answer for it. So I think that's the biggest thing. And Sean McVay, I guess he's doing like the coaches show thing after he meets with media on Mondays now. So he said mm-hmm. on the coaches show that, you know, he mentioned some, this is not a direct quote, I'm paraphrasing, he mentioned something about like the quarterback can come directly to you and talk to you about whatever problem, whatever he sees, whatever he feels and is analyzing out there, instead of having to go first look at the surface tablet to like see what just happened. And like, again, like, I'm not going to make too big of a deal out of that. Like,
right.
But I don't know. I don't think he meant it as a shot to anybody. But at the same time, like, oh, that's not something you could do last year or the year before that or the year before that. That's interesting to me. So I think that this, it's just one game, and it's just not something to,
right.
I think the score and the yardage and all that, that's all very well and good. That'll change week over week. But Rich, I think just if there's only one thing that people take away from this podcast or from this game, it is that the problem solving in real time exists. It is apparent, and that is what gets you over this very thin margin of error. It's what gets you through an incredibly loaded NFC West. It's what what helps you play well down the stretch, and it's what helps you be ready for the high pressure, incredibly high stakes scenarios that come to you at the end of the season.
Yeah, and look, you know, Sean's in a little bit of a rough spot here. I think he got into a little bit of trouble, you know, early in training camp or whatever, with his comments about, oh, being so happy or whatever. Like, it's hard not to praise Matthew Stafford without drawing those comparisons, because I mean, the stuff that you're talking about there, that kind of was Jared Goff. I mean, you look at what happened on a field, and then, you know, the first shot of him would be sitting on the bench, you know, with his face buried in the tablet. So, like, I agree with you. I don't think Sean is taking shots at Jared Goff, but it's hard not to point that out without creating a contrast of what you can do, where I think Matthew Stafford has the ability, like you said, Jordan, to kind of process that in real time. And to me, it's almost the difference between, I don't know how to say this exactly, but, you know, like somebody who can run plays versus somebody who is playing football. And I think Matthew Stafford is out there playing football and yeah. knowing that things aren't always going to go to script. And sometimes things are going to get a little messy and you know, not going to go to plan. And he's going to be able to keep his cool and know what's going on and fix it on the field. And that's the sort of thing, not to repeat myself, but I think that's another one of those things that gives your teammates confidence. You know, it gives your linemen, your receivers, confidence to stand out there and go, okay, even if things get a little sideways out here, you know, our quarterback's going to be able to deal with this and make it work. So again, we're putting a lot on Matthew Stafford for game one, but hey, look, what else are we going to say? The guy went 20 of 26 for 321 yards.
He only threw
yards.
The ball 26 times.
26 times.
I can't get over that.
It was.
I can't get over it.
Yeah, look, and quarterback rating, imperfect number. I mean, it's pretty antiquated as far as a stat goes, but I think it's worth noting just from a comparison sake. NBC pointed this out at the end of the broadcast. The highest quarterback rating, 156.1, the highest quarterback rating for any quarterback in history who started over with a new team in week one. So you think about all the quarterbacks in NFL history since they started doing this stat, I don't know what year it was, but any of them who have changed teams, Matthew Stafford had the highest rating of anybody in his first game with a new team, not counting rookies, of course. So it's pretty much a dream start for the Rams. It like you said, Jordan, it'll get tougher. Teams, I guarantee you, every team that the Rams play this year is going to be poring over that week one tape and you know, looking for tendencies, looking for ways to attack. But
can't run quarter half anymore.
No, yeah, you got it. Whatever the game plan was for 2019 and 2020, you just kind of put that on a shelf and say, like, all right, you know. But the thing that gets me, Jordan, is like I know, having been in your position, you know, before, like, you see so much during training camp, and the way that these things for people who don't know, you know, Jordan's able to watch a lot of the practice, especially in training camp. But, you know, there are restrictions in terms of reporting, and that's just the way it goes. That's the trade-off that we kind of agree to. We were able to watch, but we're not going to put out there like, oh, yeah, here's the formation that they were running, and Van Jefferson was on this side. And you know, like, I know people love those details, but, like, that's just not what we're able to do. If people started doing that, they would just totally close down all the practices. But I know, Jordan, what it's like to watch some of that stuff, and you're just kind of, you know, almost bursting to want to tell somebody and to want to explain this stuff. And like you said, now everybody getting a first look at it in week one, probably, you know, justifies why there was so much excitement in training camp.
Yeah. And, Sean McVay, I pressed him on it a little bit yesterday in his press conference, and he was a good sport about it. He obviously couldn't tell me much, but because, again, they're going to be running this more down the stretch. So, and the wrinkles that I saw with it in camp, like, obviously he's not going to reveal that. He also knows that I can't reveal that. So, the best I can do is share out, like, a fun tweet about how much, social distancing a receiver had around him on any given play. But, and that's all good fun. Like, it's just fun to see those pieces come into place. And I think the other thing is that's just it's kind of like what we talked about last week with that big story, Rich. It's like going against their defense is the best worst and best medicine they could possibly have.
Oh, yeah.
And so I think that that also helps with it, because you can give the look that you need to solve, basically. And I think when you can do that with a quarterback like Matthew Stafford, and receivers doing what they need to do on the play, you know, Robert Woods holding the second safety a couple of times on both of those explosive yards plays, I think was really important. And the line doing what it needs to do, and Matthew Stafford obviously playing with, you know, good shoulder movement and eye movement in terms of holding different guys. And so all of that stuff's important. I guess it's like being hotly debated on social media right now. But my sense from talking to people in the building is that it was not a bust, quote unquote. Like it's a play that works. So they're going to run it more. And especially if you are going to throw that look against them, they're going to run that on you. So I think that it's interesting, because I don't know that Sean has felt this way since 2017, where he's got the answers to the test. Does that make sense? Like, I'm not sure that he's really felt that way, or maybe he felt that way early in 2018, but then teams started solving him, and courtesy of Vic Fangio. and so I think that he right now, and it's going to be a long season. I know this is such a hyperbolic episode, but whatever, screw it. Like, we're allowed to have some fun, right? So sure. I really think at the moment, and it's all going to change week over week, but after that game, I felt like Sean McVay thought and felt for the first time in a while that he had the answers to the test.
Yeah, and it's coaching with confidence. It's calling plays with confidence, and knowing that you can do a variety of things, and that you're not kind of on the defensive with your play calling, or that you're limited, that sort of thing. So yeah, it looked different to me. And maybe this is a natural seg, Jordan, into kind of the balance that we talked about, because I know that that's a question, and I think it's a very fair question to ask. The Rams ended up, as it turns out, when you look at the final sheet, the running backs, not counting Matthew Stafford's scrambles or whatever, 16 carries for Daryl Henderson, one Robert Woods, one Sony Michel. So 18 touches in the run game, 26 pass attempts. So that's not, you know, super, super out of whack. But it also got a little skewed in the fourth quarter when the Rams were protecting a lead. I believe they went into the fourth quarter with only 10 rushing attempts, and then kind of kept it on the ground, obviously, with a big lead. So how do we look at this, Jordan? Very short drives. So they were, you know, the explosive plays kind of limited the number of plays that they ran to begin with, and limited the length of the drives. And you know, just didn't need, really, as funny as it sounds, didn't need to grind it out there until the fourth quarter when they did. So what's your takeaway on that? I mean, I think in an ideal world, in a more normal week, you probably want to see that balance get a little bit closer. But it didn't feel out of whack to me. And I say that as somebody who's been critical of Sean McVay in the past and with his run pass balance. But it felt to me like, hey, they're just picking up these explosive plays. And they're so how did you feel about that when the game ended?
Yeah, that was like their plan was fine. And I think, like, to me, it was fine for what this was. They were given looks where they could capitalize through the air on those explosives. Like, they were it's not like they were teed up for it by any means. It's still a challenge, obviously, but they know how to beat those things now. And you found out that they could beat them. So other teams have found this out. I would assume they still try to run some of those things against the quote unquote McVay system that have worked in the past, because at other times, depending on the athletes you have on your team, you know, maybe the pass rush gets there, or maybe the coverage is able to track a little bit better and sort of switch a little bit better. So, you know, you're probably still going to see those types of things. But in terms of, you know, I think teams are going to try to make them run early, honestly, because we still don't really know. Daryl Henderson, I thought, had a great game in pass pro because he had to, like, they were passing. Yeah. but also I think that they I think you're going to see a little bit more of a balanced attack from them, just because ultimately and over the long, long course of a season, you obviously cannot be one dimensional. And that applies to the things that you do through the air as well as the things you do on the ground. So I do think you're going to see more balance. But I think the key here is they're not they're not stuck, right? Like,
right.
If the run is not working, it doesn't mean the pass won't work. And again, and I hate to, I'm not ragging on anybody, but I really hate to, and I hate to keep bringing it up, but like in the past, if the run didn't work, the pass was effed, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Like this is, and look at this growth that I'm experiencing. I didn't say the word. I actually said the polite version of the word. So
right.
This is growth. It really is like you don't necessarily, the things that you do in the passing game might still at some point predicate off the run, but they don't depend on it. And so I think that that's something that we can take away from this game. At the same time, I think if you're going to continue to do things like mix up your play action, which they did, Matthew Stafford was perfect, literally perfect in play action. He threw eight passes, did not miss a single one, threw for 155 yards and two touchdowns, specifically went out of play action and mixed it up, not just under center where his back turns. I think he does a little peek, which is kind of cool. Like he's like, well, I'm still not going to let my back turn all the way when I'm doing that center action. But also ran two snaps out of gun action. And I think you're going to see them mix those things up. But again, you have to sell the run out of the gun before you run sort of that gun action stuff. So, just little details that are going to mean it's important to still establish that rushing attack. And some teams are going to play you different. So I definitely don't expect to see this sort of lopsided and also kind of weird. Like when you don't run the ball the way that they didn't run the ball, you expect Matthew Stafford to throw like 55 times, but he threw 26 times. So really, I think this was just a weird one all around, honestly. But I think like when you have that style, and I kind of keep going back to this, it's like, okay, we see you have the style points, but we also need to see, and other teams need to get sent the message that you can also sort of grind it out when you need to and like chip away at those long drives. And I think one of the double-edged swords of this pass attack, if it happens the way that it does, is that you can't control the clock if you are ripping off these explosives over and over again, which is great for putting points on the board, but then you can't control the clock until you start running the ball, which they did in the fourth quarter and did a nice job of that. And then also it gets your defense back on the field too quickly. So the explosives are fantastic, and I'm not taking anything away from them at all.
Right.
But sprinkling in some balance here and there to give your defense a little bit of time to recalibrate, give your kicker time to actually get out on the field. maybe there was like a bathroom break situation or something happening there, but clearly nobody expected them to score that quickly. But, just little things where, let them throw it downfield and let it rip whenever you can. But also keep in mind that there has to, it's a four quarter game and there has to be some balance in there as well, which I think they did well the second half. They did well sort of integrating that balance into it. But that's what I would expect moving forward.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Sweet Tarts dared to combine sweet and tart. But we didn't stop there. We combined soft and bouncy to bring you new Sweet Tarts Gummies Fruity Splits. A uniquely delicious dual-sided gummy with one side that's sweet and one side that's tart, but entirely smooth and squishy. Mmm, a powerfully perfect combo. Sweet Tarts, dare to combine.
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging, so you can connect with candidates faster. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/MBO. Terms and conditions apply.
The most exciting part of a vacation stay at a home rental? Easy. It's being greeted upon arrival with a rusted lockbox affixed to the underside of a stranger's condo. Yeah, you simply twist knobs, click gears, jiggle it, and then rip it off its moorings, and voila! Your prize is a key to a questionable home rental and maybe tetanus. When you just want to get your vacation started by actually getting into your room, it matters where you stay. At Hilton, we deliver your key right to your phone on the Hilton Honors app. Hilton, for the stay.
How about the split, Jordan? Because I think in last episode, one of the thing that I said I was curious about would be that split with Daryl Henderson and Sony Michel. And wow, the Rams ran 52.
Split?
the split was Daryl Henderson was split on the field and Sony Michel was split on the sideline. It was pretty much how the split went. They ran 52 offensive plays. Daryl Henderson was out there for 49 of them. Sony Michel for 3. So what should we attribute that to? I mean, again, the number of plays was low. You talked about mentioned how Daryl Henderson was successful in pass protection, so no reason to take him off the field in those situations. Is there a little bit of Sony Michel just kind of, you know, getting up to speed? Like, what would you expect going forward with that tandem?
Yeah, I mean, still more of the same, like a complimentary. And I think when people hear the word complimentary, they think it's got to be like 60-40 or 50-50. And like, that's not really right. What I mean. Maybe I'm the one using the wrong word. I think that complimentary in the sense of, you know, they're going to have Daryl Henderson go until it's not working anymore. And then they're going to have Sony Michel go. And, you know, Sony Michel, like one of the snaps they put him in on, they like made him sell out against Khalil Mack, which is also not something you want to be doing. So probably get a smarter game plan going for him when he is in the game. But at the same time, like, you know, if Daryl Henderson is available and he's doing the things that you need him to do, then they're going to keep going with Daryl Henderson doing those things. When they aren't working, that's when you have sort of the luxury of switching backs and maybe running a little bit of a different style of run. And it's going to be situational and predicated off opponent also. And I don't necessarily think that it's, you know, Sony Michel isn't totally caught up, although I would believe that that would be understandable if that were the case. But I think that he's incredibly talented, very, very smart, and has worked really hard behind the scenes to get himself caught up. So I think it was some of its game plan. Daryl Henderson, you know, you're gonna also, he simply was not going to get, you know, sort of that crazy carry share. He carried the ball 16 times. That's about his magic number in that regard. Right. You aren't going to do it much more than that. So you don't have a reason to have a two-back system. Like, that's about, I think, Daryl Henderson's number right there. So if you're going to have a game where you're carrying the ball a lot more than that, Sony Michel, I think, comes in and sort of does more of those things. But this was just a weird one. Like, you just weren't going to see they I don't think, other than making a couple of statements with those plays, like, I don't think that they even went very far into their playbook. They had those, I think, at the top, like, ready to go. But I don't think that they dug super far into it, which, again, is another thing that if you have an explosive passing play game early on in your season, that not only you kind of puts a Band-Aid on a couple of things, including, like, you know, less wear and tear on your running back, who you're maybe already kind of worried about making through the entire season. And you also don't have to show everything. Like, you could, like, put a little of that fear in people's hearts a little bit with those dagger plays, but you don't have to show everything that you can do. And you can continue to sort of keep things close to the vest for down the stretch. So, I expected to see a little bit more of Sony, but once they started going pass heavy, I was like, yeah, we probably won't see this guy in this game. And so I don't know, Rich, did you have him on your fantasy football team? I was wondering how that went for you.
No, sore subject that. No, yeah, and no, I did not. I actually did not draft any Rams. I don't know. Sometimes I feel like I'm too close to that situation to draft any Rams.
It's very ethical. Gosh,
now I wish that I had.
Unlike John Walford, who put the Rams defense the Rams on his defense. Fantasy football team last year.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, Ben, that brings me to something else I was thinking about. Before we pivot to the defense, because there's also a lot to talk about on the defense, but one thing that grabbed my eye right away after the game, I didn't notice it during the game, I'll be honest, but when I saw the sheet with the snap counts, Tyler Higbee was on the field for all 52 plays. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, and I mean this when I say I don't know, because I haven't looked back at every sheet since 2016, but I don't know that has ever happened before. I don't know that he's ever been on the field for 100% of the plays. He was out there for 52 Johnny Munt, the only other tight end who checked in, was on the field for 15. So my math is really bad. That's a little under 25%. So somewhere between 20 and 25%, I guess. But what should we make of that? If anything, is that even notable? What does it mean for Tyler Higbee, and what does it mean for that Rams offense?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's good news for Tyler Higbee, because then obviously too, he's going to get the ball. I mean, I think that's one of the things you expected when you see Matthew Stafford join the roster. It's like, you know, he likes to throw to tight ends. You know, the Rams have a very good complete tight end in Tyler Higbee. So especially with them not sort of going as deep into the playbook as they maybe did in camp, when you'd see Jacob Harris like detached from the core, for example, or you'd see a lot of those things, you can be effective with, you know, sort of your standard ball distribution with your guys who are in your core. That's Cooper Kupp, Van Jefferson, Tyler Higbee, Robert Woods, a little DeSean Jackson sprinkled in there. And I think that, you know, that worked for him, obviously, clearly it did. For Tyler Higbee, I think, you know, I'm not overly surprised considering how involved he was, but this is the thing with Tyler Higbee, as we've seen, and we have to figure out like how similar or how different certain facets of this offense will be is, you know, is this going to be a continuous thing, or is it going to be like, okay, this was the Tyler Higbee game, and then next week maybe it's another right. Tyler Higbee game, and then, you know, he's gone. And so I don't believe it would be like that. I think that they're wanting to get him involved as much as possible. And I think when you have someone who you're expecting to activate all of these eligible receivers, that was our big offseason word, is activation of eligibles. Like, mm-hmm. guys are going to get the ball. A lot of different guys are going to get the ball in. And, you know, sometimes, you know, you see like DeSean Jackson had 21 yards, two catches, 21 yards. Maybe next week it'll be a heavier DeSean Jackson game and a lesser Tyler Higbee game, or maybe Robert Woods will be the leading receiver instead of Cooper Kupp. But I think one thing won't change, and that is distributing the ball around quite a bit, because that's something that was one of the main goals, something they obviously have not been able to do as much the last couple of years. And so one of the main goals this year was show a lot of different looks, get the ball to a lot of different guys, and give the defense a lot more to think about. And having Tyler Higbee a heavy part of that offense is certainly one of those things.
Yeah. Very, you know, a lot of talk about him last year and kind of, you know, what happened and why he wasn't as big a part of that offense. But Matthew Stafford known to like his tight ends also. So six targets was second most behind Cooper Kupp's 10, and five catches for 68 yards. So that'll be something to monitor. Jordan, you've covered more about the offense in the pile. So I want to make sure everybody, you know, goes and checks that out if they haven't already. But don't want to ignore the defense also. I know that's always close to your heart is what the defense is doing. There's a lot to talk about here. So I'm going to start with the very basic and obvious one before we go to you for some deeper analysis. And my my deep analysis is Jalen Ramsey, a good football player, pretty good at football. My goodness, what a game that he had! And look, a lot of guys. I want to, you know, shout out some Kenny Young. I thought was fantastic. Justin Hollins, flash. Jordan Fuller. We talked about how his first game as the green dot would go. 11 tackles to lead the team, and it looked sharp out there to me. It looked good to me. David Long comes up with big play and, you know, fills in nicely. But you couldn't keep your eyes off of Jalen Ramsey, Jordan. And the reason was that he was all over the field, as you've written about, you know, going back a year now. The way that they can use Jalen Ramsey and you know, play him all over the field, and you even have the quote in your column on Sunday night, Jalen Ramsey saying, "I'm being put in positions that I've never been put in before to make plays and do things for my team." So you talk about a guy who's, you know, arguably been one of the top, if not the top, cornerbacks in the NFL over the last couple of years. And it seems like he's still getting better, or they're still finding ways, perhaps I should say, to better utilize his skills. So again, I know Captain Obvious to say that, but my goodness, the guy was just all over the place.
Yeah, and this is something, my understanding of this is something that's been validated based on watching. I did catch the first half of the Chargers game, wanting to see what Brandon was doing with that defense before I left for SoFi, and that's a whole other that journey was a whole other story. But
are you renting a helicopter for the next home game?
I've actually set up a small tent inside SoFi, so I just don't have to leave again. So that would take me less time than getting there. But
right.
Yeah. So this sort of evolution of what Jalen is doing is something that's deeper in the Brandon Staley defensive playbook, right? And before anybody gets on me about this, I know there are some disgruntled analysts on Twitter talking about this, but like. No, the star position is not new. Like, they didn't just invent it. No, it's been around for like 2 decades. Like, it's not new, probably longer than that. But, I've only been around for, almost 3 decades. So I would not know how long it's been around, but it's been around forever. But the reason why it's exciting and the reason why we're talking about it is because it's new to this defense.
Right.
Or newish, you know, they dabbled in it last year. And it's new to the people playing it, in the sense that the position, the way that they've integrated it and incorporated it in their defense, is it can evolve as the player changes and grows and as the situation dictates. And it's very just like fluid and flexible, and it's a fascinating thing. So this is something that they've been planning with Jalen for a while, and you saw it all spring and all summer, and he was just in the slot, in the star, in the star, in the star, which again is, please go read my story on it. It is different from just the nickel, but at the same time, it's, you know, if you're at the bar and you're explaining it to your friend who doesn't watch football, then maybe just say like, it's the slot, but it's not technically that. But what I think you're seeing them go deeper into that playbook, and especially watching what Derwin James was able to do, you see that this is just an evolution. If they were to keep Brandon for a second year, this would be the evolution of what he would also implement into, Jalen Ramsey's plan. So, the thing that is so effective about this is you cannot get away from the guy. Like, you can't get away from him. And like, oh my God, how stressful that must be.
Right?
Because there's even a point. So I mentioned this in my column, because there was even a point where even when you think you got away from him, you didn't. There was like a point, the Bears receivers were in a bunch formation, and Andy Dalton was just trying to get a little pass out to the flat. And the bunch, what it helps with is it helps put the defensive backs on the side. Like, it helps kind of put them into like a garbage chute situation where there's just too much trash with the receivers, and you can't, you know, you're getting bumped a little bit, and you can't quickly get to the guy who actually has the ball. So it's sort of like they're helping block downfield a little bit and create that extra space. Well, the Rams match routes, by the way, which, you know, again, we've covered a lot of, and they match routes. So they knew, not only did they know, it's like having the answers to the test. Again, this defense has for 2 years now had the answers to the test. And so at this point, it's just almost like you're like, oh, sweetie, what are you doing when you see these guys run a play against them like this? And so this look was similar to when Darius Williams, remember his pick six against Seattle?
Yep.
Where he kind of navigated through a similar sort of bunched up situation. Yeah. And because they had matched these routes, that he had seen them on tape, and they had matched them in practice in the scout team look. And so he knew exactly where the ball was going, and he was able to jump it. And this is exactly what Jalen Ramsey did, right? The thing was not Jalen Ramsey had played everywhere on the field at that point, outside corner, inside corner, close to the line of scrimmage. They had him lined up as an extra defensive, like if you're having like an extra outside linebacker outside of Justin Hollins's right shoulder, they had him everywhere. Like, God help you, honestly. Like, which side are you going to go to? Are you going to go to Leonard Floyd's side and Aaron Donald's side, or are you going to go to Jalen Ramsey and Justin Hollins' side? Like, God help you. But when this play occurred, he was actually lined up on the outside, and he was going to be the blocking, like acquired blocked guy, right? Obviously, you want to sort of take him out of the equation. Jordan Fuller comes down and almost disguises into the nickel, during this. And Jordan Fuller plays from depth. So this, to me, was clearly something that they knew the play and then were going to present their own disguise to assert where the ball was going to go. So he's sort of showing that that space where almost like he's going to come in on a safety blitz, but he's in the nickel spot. And so it further reiterates the fact that Andy Dalton has to throw the ball to the bunched receiver, right? Especially with pressure coming from the opposite side. And Jalen Ramsey just carries, after the ball snap, Jalen Ramsey carries his player with him to make the stop.
Yeah.
And that's the one that LeBron James tweeted about, by the way. That was the play. Like that was just, not only did you clearly force the offense to do exactly what you wanted them to do, even when they thought they were doing the answer to what you were showing, it turns out there was no right answer that they could do. There's only pain. I hope I'm explaining that right. Cause it just was like, so, these guys are so smart and they're so fun to watch. And I was frustrated with some of the commentary I saw about this defense after this game. I don't think, again, we don't know exactly what they're going to look like down the stretch. We don't know, but the way that they were schemed, the guys who were able to express themselves in terms of people who made plays and people who were just in the right places and rotating. And I was frustrated to see some of the incorrect criticism, by the way, in my opinion. And we'll get to that, Rich, in a minute, because I want to ask you your thoughts on it. But this defense was so smartly schemed and smartly executed, I think, in this game. And it was just a glimpse at what their potential is. And I think that my hat goes off not only to these guys, but also to Raheem Morris, because this was his first game calling this defense. And to see how they didn't, you know, his wrinkles were there. The way that Kenny Young played, that's a Raheem Morris wrinkle. His development of Kenny Young is the reason why they can go to those 5-1 fronts that they need to be in order to dictate the coverage.
Right.
In order to dictate the passing game, because the coverage dictates that front. And Kenny Young's evolution and his the way that he has sort of blossomed, that is a Raheem Morris wrinkle. Jalen Ramsey is going to be a solution for a couple of things coming down the stretch that I'm sort of watching for. I'm not going to get into yet, but that's going to be a Raheem Morris wrinkle. And I think that that he called a really good game. They had two big things that I think were mistakes and were things that they need to clean up. And one was the 41-yard run by David Montgomery, and the other was that 16-play drive. But other than that, I thought this game, they called such a smart game, such a smart game. I mean, it was a really, I thought it was a really good outing for them.
Yeah, I agree, Jordan. And there's things we can talk about. I want to, you know, talk about that run defense too a little bit. And but you look at it, and again, for a first game, I just didn't see anything structurally that bothered me. And that's really what I was looking at. I mean, the results, like, things can happen. You know, like, I think I might be confusing the run, so I'm sorry if I am. But one of the big runs by David Montgomery, like, Darius Williams was in a position to make the tackle, just whether it was bad angle or whatever it was, like that could have been a 5-yard carry that turned into however long that was. So things like that, like, that's not a structural problem. That's not a design problem. It's just things happen sometimes. Like, not every tackle gets made. Not every angle gets made. But when I looked at what they were trying to accomplish and what they did, it looked very smart, and it looked like it was being executed very well. I mean, Andy Dalton, look, we talked about Andy Dalton last week. He is what he is at this point, right? I mean, he probably takes too much criticism, but you never felt threatened by Andy Dalton in that game. You never felt threatened by the Bears' passing attack. Allen Robinson, I love Allen Robinson. He got targeted 11 times and had 35 yards receiving. So he was never a threat in that game. I don't think they utilized him particularly well, but he was not a threat. And the Bears have some some weapons on that offense, but they were never really able to get any of them going. And I think that's as much a credit to Raheem Morris and the Rams' execution as it is to anything that might be going on in Chicago. I'm sure you listen to Bears fans, they might have a slightly different take on the situation. But, you know, they also prepared for Justin Fields, who did mm-hmm. get on the field for a handful of plays. They didn't really utilize him in you know anything dramatic, but it was something that they had to think about, something that they had to prepare for. But so Jordan, what do we think about that the run game now? Just to put it in context, David Montgomery, 16 carries, 108 yards. As you noted, Jordan, 41 of those yards came on one play. So it gets a little skewed. But how do we put that in the right context in terms of some of those fronts that the Rams were running, what they wanted to accomplish? I think it's also fair to say like that Bears offensive line is not great. So how do we kind of put that all in context and what should we think about that going forward? Because now week two, we haven't really talked about it yet, but you know, going to Indianapolis, Jonathan Taylor there had a great rookie season. Mm-hmm. He wasn't very good week one against a pretty good Seattle team. But what's the right context there in terms of the Rams run defense in week one?
Yeah. So, and like, I am all but just begging you guys, if you have not read, first of all, The Pile, which sort of summarizes it way more succinctly than this other story does, but the pin story at the top of my Twitter page, which dissects and kind of gets into Brandon Staley's defense as a part of a larger conversation about the way that he and Sean McVay sort of battled with each other and shaped each other. But it does get into why this defense does the things that it does. And like when I see, like I was watching the coaches show, for example, yesterday, right? It's like on Periscope mm-hmm. or whatever. This is after Sean jumped off with media. And the first comment was, this run defense looks suspect. And I don't think I think that's a Raheem Morris problem. And I don't trust Raheem Morris. And I'm like, oh, sweetie, like, you know, but, and I'm frustrated with that. Right. Because it's not for lack of, like, I think the way that these guys do it is clear. And so that's not to excuse a 41 yard explosive run play, right? That's not great. The way that this defense is designed, you are okay with averaging 3.5-4 yards per carry. You want to be obviously like maybe less than 4, ideally. But in a real situation with a running back as talented as David Montgomery is, you're probably, you know, shooting for closer to 4, right? You are shooting to try to and that's not every carry. That's a 4-yard carry, a 2-yard carry. That's a 3-yard carry, you know, a 1-yard carry. That's these are things where you're trying to set up these your adverse passing downs. You're sort of inviting the run because you're using lighter boxes, 6 or less defenders in the box, at the second highest frequency of any team in the league, which they also did last year. The Rams did it like 74% rate. So what that does is it allows your safeties and your corners to play from depth, first of all, which is not only the best way to contain the explosive passing plays that, oh, by the way, the Bears were not able to contain and it broke them in half. So I don't know if you want to be on the other side of that. This is, you know, let's think about it. And on the other hand, it also means that you are not going to get just sort of abused by play action passing, which is what everyone in the league does now to try to sort of beat good coverages. But the way that this coverage is set up, first of all, it's set up heavier in the back and playing from depth. So that dictates what they're able to do in the front. They play gap and a half in the front, which is exactly what it sounds like. You know, I would think they've got a couple of things to clean up, a couple of guys that are filling into new spots that they need to, you know, maybe be a little bit short up in terms of maybe some rustiness and what have you. But the point is, it sounds like cherry picking, right? The explosive run is not supposed to happen. So that was definitely a mistake. That was not something that's supposed to happen.
Right.
If you take away that explosive run, they are right on track with exactly what the game plan would dictate, exactly what where they need to go and what they need to do at, like, you know, less than 3.5 yards per carry. That is exactly what they need to do to set up the adverse passing downs. When you set up the adverse passing down, you cannot throw the ball downfield because there is a literal helmet placed around the perimeter of this coverage. Like, you cannot throw the ball downfield against this defense, not just because of the scheme, but because of the player's ability within that scheme. And it might happen once or twice. You might see it. Teams will find ways, right? But at the same time, against this defense last year, you could not throw the ball downfield. And so your best option at that point becomes a check down pass. So you're just dinking and dunking down the field the entire game. Right. That's the only way to beat this team. And then somehow not getting pushed off the field, which they, you know, they're able to do that 16 play drive. That was an example of how to beat this defense. Right. But you have to do that the entire game, and you're not going to, right?
Without mistakes.
Without any mistakes. And you're just not going and you're just not going to. And that's what this defense bets. So no, I'm not excusing the 41-yard explosive. But that's the only reason this run game looked as successful as it did, was that play. And so I think that's where I get a little bit, you know, wanting to just kind of reiterate it and, you know, wanting to make sure that it's clear. Like, it's just the way that they play. And I don't respond to some of the negative stuff on Twitter, obviously. But when I do see people being like, oh, they're playing too soft, they're playing too soft, it's like, they're not playing soft. They're not letting you do what you want to do against them.
Right.
That's not softness. No. Like, that's not softness. They're not letting you break their backs. Like, you literally have an example of what that means to have your back broken on the other side of the ball. Matthew Stafford did it 4 times. Like, you have an example of what that can do to you on the other side. Like, you don't want that happening to you. That's the way that they play this way. It's not like you're not giving them things. You're not allowing things. You are forcing them to use one page of their playbook as opposed to 20. That's the best way I can describe it. You are forcing, you are dictating to them what they are able to do because you are presenting the coverages and the fronts in this way.
Right.
And so that, to me, it's not like, oh, you know, that it's hugely sociological if you think about it, right? Because the same things that fans have, you know, I'm not saying this collectively. I saw like one or two, you know, it's not like, I think everybody was like kind of understands what they're trying to do. Right. But the negative people can be very loud. but I think when I did see it, it was like, it's interesting, right? Because the same people who complain about like the 3-4 yard runs at a time or the check downs or those types of things, the same people that complain about that are the same offensive coordinators that Brandon Staley, Raheem Morris, Vic Fangio, they're the same coordinators that they bet will make the mistake because they can't bear it. They can't stand it. They cannot possibly check it down on you that many times in a row. Can't bear it. So they'll overcommit and make a mistake. So you guys, congratulations. You're the same people that they target with this defense. So it's interesting. It's very interesting. And like, again, that does not excuse the mistakes, and there were some mistakes and definitely some things to get cleaned up. And I think that, again, you can't have those explosive runs in particular because, you know, I would even say that I'd forgive an explosive pass more than I would forgive one of those explosive runs because, again, that predicates everything you can do in the passing game. So I definitely would forgive that less. But that's also something where, you know, they gave up. It's not a good offense, you know.
Right.
It wasn't a good offense, but 14 points is not anything to be ashamed of, I don't think.
Yeah, and just to put some numbers to what you're talking about here, Jordan. Yeah, look, the Bears ran 69 offensive plays. 3 of them went for longer than 11 yards.
That's a great point, Rich. A great point. Yeah, I should have stopped ranting way earlier and just allowed you to offer.
you're giving I'm giving raw numbers here. I mean, you're giving the context behind it, but that's what and even to your point, Jordan. Okay, there's the 41 yard run. There's the 19 yard pass to Goodwin. There's another 14-yard run by David Montgomery that I think was on that first drive also. And then look at the other. I'm looking at the play-by-play sheet here, right? Even the 19-yard pass to Goodwin. I'm reading the play-by-play. This is not my analysis, okay? Andy Dalton, pass short right. 11-yard completion. Andy Dalton, pass short left. 11-yard completion, Andy Dalton, pass short, middle. Do you see a trend here? Like this is they were picking up their yardage even on these plays that you would say, oh, they picked up 10 yards on that pass play. It was more like a 5-yard pass and then maybe a 5-yard yak to get them to 10 yards. So you're right, Jordan. You don't want to see that number 41 at the top of the sheet here on a run play. That's not acceptable. You know, you can't have that all the time, but you have to put it in the context of what they were trying mm-hmm. to accomplish here on defense. And I think you also have to put it in the context of knowing what this Rams offense can do. The Rams offense was able to score 34 points. All of it came from the offense. The Bears weren't going to score 35 points doing what they were doing on offense. It wasn't going to happen. So I think it paired nicely. If your offense can be in sync that the way the Rams offense was and able to score like that, yes, you want a little bit more balance. Yes, you want to give your defense a little more rest maybe and don't want to put
them
in them.
Yeah.
Right. But there was nothing wrong with the way that the Rams were playing defense other than, like we've said, you want to clean some stuff up there. You don't want to make those 8-yard runs turn into 20-yard runs. But I didn't really see anything that made me go, oh, wow, there's a lot of structural problems there. Or there's some long-term problems there. Some things to clean up. Absolutely. You're going to want to be Jonathan Taylor. I like him a lot as a running back. I haven't been able to really break down their game against Seattle to see what was going on there. He only had 56 yards on 17 carries against Seattle. So certainly not what they were looking for.
Yeah. Plus a better offensive line, I think, coming in this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you'll want to, you know, that'll certainly be something to look at. You don't want Indianapolis to be able to control the ball on the ground and start dictating the game. But there wasn't anything there that made me go, oh, wow, that Rams defense is in trouble. They're going to have some issues. For me, Jordan, it was the other way. It was, wow, they're really doing some things that are exciting and that from a structural standpoint were really, really interesting to watch.
Yeah. One last thing before we move on to just a quick note about this week.
Sure.
So the last thing that I will also share is the Rams stopped 4 fourth down conversion attempts, which I found out this week that internally they count them as takeaways. Like Sean McVay mentioned that. So I guess that would make, 5 takeaways? Is that correct? 5 takeaways in the game if you're counting quote unquote coaches film, which we don't measure life that way, but good, you know, that's a good feather to have in their cap after this one. But I did get a comment from somebody that said that they were worried about the defense because they didn't force the Bears to punt enough.
Okay.
I'm just going to leave you with that.
Fill in your own. It's like a Mad Libs. You can just fill in your own comment there.
And guys, like, this is all in good fun, right? We're all just, you know, this is like, I wish we were all in a bar talking about this together, right? Like,
yeah.
But
no,
that's a comment that exists in the world.
Yeah, it's there. Yeah, and you know what? Like, I like fans to have high standards, just like I like coaches to have high standards and teams to have high standards. So we didn't, you know, this is a Rams podcast, so I won't get into my USC rants. But you know, the Clay Helton got fired, and one of my big problems there was that there didn't seem to be high expectations. It was kind of like, you know, yeah, it's great. We just beat Oregon State by 3 points. Like, that's kind of a problem. Like, you shouldn't be just beating Oregon State by 3 points. And so I'd have no problem with fans or anybody looking at things and going, hey, you know what, how can that get better? Or is this a concern or whatever? Because, you know, coaches do the same things. You know, coaches are going to be poring over the tape. And it's not that you expect perfection, but you're always looking for ways to improve. And, you know, what went wrong in that game? You point out the positive things. And, you know, I know when coaches go over film, they point out the positives. Hey, look at that. We did that well. You did that well. You did that well. And then they go over some of the negatives and say, hey, we can clean that up. That can get better. Here's how we could have done that better. So that's fine. I've got no problem with people doing that or, you know, picking at certain things. But as long as you put it in the right context, as long as you, you know, look at the kind of the overall game and, you know, what does it say? And is it a structural problem or is it just something that happens during a game?
Yeah, and perhaps this person meant that he would prefer to not see them cross over midfield as frequently. So
sure.
maybe that's what he meant. But I went back and I looked. So I read it and I went back and I looked at their fourth down. I was like, well, they're going for it every fourth down.
Right.
And then the Rams stopped them. So no, they're not punting. But you might get freaking Cooper Kupp back there catching punts, which is not what should be happening. And adamantly, what Sean McVay basically laughed. Right. When a media member asked him about it, because Cooper was listed as the punt returner on the fake depth chart that they put out every training camp.
Right.
And he laughed and he's like, no, he's not going to be the punt returner. And then he's out there at punt return, which is a whole other, we could spend a whole episode talking about that nonsense. But I think,
maybe he should have said he's not our punt returner right now.
Yeah. That's what he should have said. Yeah. But I think that, to me, I mean, that's not going to be the case moving forward. If that's the case moving forward, there's bigger questions to ask about drafting Tutu Atwell in the second round. So, but we're not going to ask those questions because it's just one game.
Discussion for another week.
I have faith in the young man. I think he could do some good things in that regard. So, that's a discussion for another time. But, I think the main thing that I'm looking for this weekend Rich I think the Colts have a very, very good defense. I think that this will be maybe a better test for the Rams offensively than maybe this past week was, even though I think Sean Desai has got a bright future ahead of him. This Colts defense is going to be tough. I also think it's going to be a tough day in the trenches for these guys on both sides.
Yeah, it'll be I think it sets up well. I think you mentioned, Jordan, last week how Chicago was a great week one opponent. And that I think ended up playing out exactly the right way. And I think Indianapolis is a good week two opponent to have to go on the road. And like you said, a good defense that's going to, test this Rams offense in different ways. So, Seattle did a nice job. It was 28-16. They were up 21-10, I think, at halftime. They were fairly in control of that game. Colts offense didn't do a lot to help them. I don't think Carson Wentz looked great in that game. He didn't make any big mistakes, but he also didn't, do anything particularly dynamic. And like we said, that run game didn't really get going. So, I was just looking, Vegas has this at Rams about -4. It actually opened at -3 and went to -4. So kind of the early money. Pretty heavy in favor of the Rams. That seems about right to me. I thought whatever it ended up being with Chicago, I think it was about 7. And I thought, I think the Rams are gonna, exceed that a little bit. And of course they did. Ended up winning by 20. But this could be a tighter game, lower scoring. I think maybe this is, we talk about trying to control the game on the ground a little bit more. Mm-hmm. Will be something that will be important for that Rams offense. But certainly a game that I think they should win. But a game that presents a little bit of a different challenge than this past week.
Yeah, I would agree with you on all those points, Rich. I think that this is going to be an interesting one to watch. I will be there. I am traveling this year. A little bit nervous, but I have traveled this spring after getting my vaccination. So obviously feeling much better about it right now than I was last year around this time. So definitely looking forward to bringing you guys as many updates as possible. And we'll also be your beat writer on the ground all week as usual. And so we're trying to figure out what the best days and times are for when you guys want to hear from us here at the 11 Personnel Podcast. So definitely give us feedback for that if you have it. Definitely leave us. We love reading your reviews. We love getting 5-star ratings from you guys. We love hearing all of our inside jokes kind of get rolling here, which is going to be fun. No tortured metaphor of the week this week from me. I don't think anyway. There might have been one that I missed during one of my rants, but I'll try to think of some good ones. That is something that I very much got a good laugh at. Shout out to the people over on the herd. I definitely appreciate you guys' feedback and appreciated the tortured metaphor of the week guy popping up over there. Rich, everyone can follow you on Twitter at @Rich_Hammond, and you can follow me at Jordan, @JordanRodrigue on Twitter. Please, please, please subscribe to The Athletic. We've got some fun stuff coming. Definitely had action-packed lead up to the season in terms of some of the features over there. If you haven't checked those out yet, please do. And we sure enjoy this, guys. We love getting to talk with you, or talk at you, I guess, every week. But, you know, we try to talk with you too. If you give us feedback, we will read it and respond to it. And we're sure looking forward to spending this season with you. So thanks again, guys. And we'll catch you next week.
Hey, hey. Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.